Well, good evening and welcome to this live stream event on the 12th of January 2021. Thank you very much for spending some time with me this evening. Martin North from DFA here. Hope you're all well. Good to see a good number on already. And as always, I'm sure a few more will drop in a bit later as we go through. As always, too, there's a lot to get through. I've got some really important stuff to share with you this evening. Been playing around with my geo-mapping tools, and the more I looked at it, the more interesting it became. So we'll touch on some of those. Have you reduced your screen size so you can have the live chat in the live? We like it. It's no difference. I've just rearranged things so that the chat pops up at the bottom. And that's that one. Greta, thank you. Good to see you. And as well, Nadita, thanks for that contribution. You know, I can't show that particular one. The reason is that the little moving icons mess my chat up. So I apologize for that. Anyway, without further ado, let's get on with the business in hand. So this is a bit like as normal. Hi, Mr. Negative. Good to see you back. And Jason, not all negative. Hopefully there'll be a bit of positivity too there tonight. A lot of interesting things going on though in the data. So it's certainly worth trying to understand a bit about where things are, and we'll go through some of that now. So as normal, I'm just going to start with the running order, which is what we're doing really now, I guess. This introduction, quickly on the house rules, about our models, some key slides. During this part of the show, I'm not really going to not look at the chat that much. So if you've got specific questions, or if, for example, if you want a postcode for me to look up later, hold off until after, and then I can make sure that I see it. Q&A, of course, be the bulk of the conversation, probably about an hour or so. Aim to finish about 9:30 as normal, which that's when we'll sign off. And just as normal, please understand, I have to say this isn't financial advice. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm just looking at the data and the basic analysis that I've done to essentially look at what's going on. Do play nice in the chat room. No racial slurs, please. It is being moderated. We do chop people out if they don't play by the rules, just to keep it nice for everybody. Also, I encourage you to chat with each other in the chat room as well. I may not be able to comment on everything that everybody says, but nevertheless, I'm very happy to see that conversation. I think it's part of the community build that we've got here, and it's great to see so many interacting. So keep it up. Also, I've got it right tonight, 12th of January 2021, if this is watched in replay. If you want me to answer your specific question, make sure you put at Walk the World in the question. There's almost so much going on that quite often I really don't get a chance to see everything, but that's a good way to make sure I do. Or you can use Super Chat, which is enabled. That will put your question right at the top of the list. Or indeed, if you want to make a contribution to help us cover the costs of what we do here. This isn't a profit generating exercises, I think I may have said before. This is merely just covering the costs that are involved in creating these shows on a regular basis. Now, as normal, for those new, we run Core Market Model, which is essentially a series of surveys, 52,000 household surveys a year, 4,500 a month. We pull information from multiple sources to be able to put the facts together, pull information from APRA, RBA, wherever, into our core market model, and that then drives everything we do. The information comes in weekly, so it's a very, very fast cycle turnaround, and probably better than most of the publicly available information. We all can also slice and dice all sorts of different ways, Rubik cube-wise, and that's quite important because there's lots of different things going on amongst different property segments, different geographies, different household segments. And that means that we can get granular, as we often do. Of course, we can also then think about our scenarios, and we run these scenarios on an ongoing basis, so they do change. And those scenarios essentially come off the back of the core market model. And that allows us then to use things like mortgage stress and the price trajectory and the buying and selling intentions and the migration data and the CPI data in and through the core market model through the scenarios to be able to then look at prices, price movements at a postcode level, rolled up to a region, state and all Australia. And of course, I use that information in all sorts of different ways, including tonight. Now, in terms of what we said the other day, bearing in mind that some people were away, just quickly a quick recap. Mortgage stress was a little lower. It was 41.1% of households compared with 41.6%. So a little bit better, but still very high compared with where we were previously. And also, it's worth noting that the RBA reported that household debt to income ratios were actually down a little at 179.9%. But nevertheless, I have to tell you that that doesn't tell the full story because, of course, only one third of households have mortgages. So the true number for those with mortgages is roughly three times that. And the other thing is we covered last time our stress scenarios. I had a couple of people ask beforehand about our scenarios and how we handle the virus. And just to say that we've got various scenarios there from the sort of best case vaccinations work and it all ties up quite quickly, through to a longer term crunch when the virus continues, through to multi-wave disruptions or indeed uncontrolled pandemics. And each of those have different consequences in terms of mortgage stress, home prices, the range of what I call unnatural acts the central bank might do, and also a relative probability. And interestingly, for the first time, the best case, which is assuming the vaccines work, is now on par with the longer term crunch scenario, which is when the borders remain shut for a lot longer and we continue to see more virus appearing from time to time, not necessarily like the UK or the US, but sufficient to be able to force bits of the economy to close. So you can see there that there's quite a difference of outcome in terms of house price movements. And just to be clear, there is a scenario which says that house prices will rise over the next 2 to 3 years, not dramatically, but somewhere between 10% perhaps, which is a little bit below what I think the core modelling from the Reserve Bank would say, 10-15% over 3 years. But nevertheless, there is a path to higher home prices, but it's not necessarily the only path. And it really does come back to what happens with the virus, of course. And I think that the virus is going to be the primary driver to economic outcomes ahead. Now, just from briefly from Canstar, they published some information today. And interestingly, there were no variable rate changes over the last 3 weeks, Only one lender made fixed rate changes with a rate cut of almost nothing and increased the fixed rates slightly. Lender increased some of its fixed rate investment rates slightly as well. But the average variable interest rate for an occupier to paying principal interest is 3.31%. The lowest rate with a 60% LVR is 1.77% or 1.99% at 80% LVR. And I'll underscore again, the apathy tax means many people are paying a lot more than they potentially need to because they're not shopping around. So if you have a mortgage and you haven't shopped around recently, it is worth doing it. There are some significantly cheaper deals out there. The average variable interest rate for investors is about 3.67%, the lowest rate 1.89 or 1.99%. And on savings and deposits, no savings rates changes over the last week. Two providers cut term deposit rates by 0.05 to 0.15%. One provider increased slightly. The average rate on a regular saving account is, wait for it, 0.44%. The maximum rate, 1.75%. which is a special four-month introductory period. Again, it's worth shopping around, but of course, rates on savings accounts are really, really low now. And the average rate on a bonus saving account, 0.74%, maximum rate, 1.35%. So again, shop around. Now, CoreLogic reported that the listings were down. So on their combined capitals model, 65,817 total listings, down 17.8%. And the observation there is, of course, that they always go down at this time of year, but is this different this time? Now, Cookie Boy sent me over some information. This is based on domain. Back in July, there were 243,537 homes listed available. Today, it's dropped back to 199,150. So, significant proportion down. So, thanks, Cookie Boy, for that. And it also make the point that the difference between the CoreLogic numbers and the domain numbers is quite interesting in terms of how you define what a listing is. CoreLogic also said that the mortgage index dropped in terms of the volumes that are actually there as well. Now, again, you'd sort of expect that to an extent, given the Christmas and New Year holidays. But, you know, it's just another indication that things are very quiet at the moment. The question is, how much will they bounce back? The ABS reported that retail was strongest in November and superficially up 7% looked quite good. But then if you actually dig into it, what you discover is that the reason was Victoria went up 22.4% because of the unlocked, you see. It's actually on average about 2.2 to 2.3% the rest of the states. So nothing stellar at all. Remember, that was November, so we'll see what Christmas came up with next time, bearing in mind, of course, that there were a number of lockdowns subsequent. And it's interesting that Roy Morgan reported today that the renewed lockdowns are hurting. They said that the confidence year normally is pretty good during the holidays, but they're concluding that the lockdowns and border closures have impacted sentiment to some extent. I agree. My data is saying something similar, particularly over the last couple of weeks. Sentiment is off again. I'm going to talk about the data for December in this analysis. And a lot of the data in December was a bit stronger because that was before a lot of the lockdowns came through. But this is a really important slide, which I tripped over. The Buffett indicator. Now, this is the relationship between global market cap and global GDP. And basically, it is now up to 121, or it was when the chart was created a day or so or two ago. And interestingly, that was where it was just before the global financial crisis collapse. So the question is that an indication of trouble ahead? Well, you know, who knows? The markets are certainly a little volatile at the moment. And I saw there's a bit of chat about Bitcoin earlier on. We'll probably come back to that through the conversation later. Now, in terms of financial confidence, this is based from my data. It did improve in December. It went up to 88.34. So that's up about 3.5 to 4 points. It's still below the 100 median level. So the overall confidence level is still below neutral, but it's definitely improving. And interestingly, if you look at it by wealth segments, this is basically the key way that I look at it. What's interesting is that the free affluent segment, so those are the people without mortgages, who own quite often own property, but definitely have significant holdings in the markets, they've actually moved up to neutral. So they are very, very strong, much more positive now. The household groups that are renting has come up a little. That's partly because rents in some areas are still down and there's more available property in some places. And even those mortgaged are also seeing a little bit of an improvement, but still below the neutral setting. So that's the overall distribution between the three segments. But there is a very strong bifurcation between those with assets and no mortgages and those who are mortgaged or indeed in renting. And I've spoken a little bit, I think, already, and you may have seen it in one of my earlier conversations about what I call the K-shaped recovery. So the idea there is we've got a proportion of the population doing really, really well and are sitting there thinking, I don't know what the problem is. I'm saving. I've been given money by the government. I'm being given tax breaks. Mortgage rates are really, really low if I've still got a mortgage and I've got all of this performance in stock markets. I've got another group who are actually in a completely different sense. They're the ones with mortgage up the hilt, with high levels of debt, with incomes being very much compressed, with considerable issues with their household finances, so they're actually not feeling it. Many of them are now in part-time work or less work than they had previously. And the net result is we've got this bifurcation going on between those two parts of the economy. I think that's going to be something which we've got to keep an eye on because ahead, I think it will be quite disruptive. Now, by property segment, that's the overall average. The owner-occupier active people are getting quite close to positive now. That's with really low rates and with the prospect potentially of prices perhaps higher than they thought previously. Even the property investors are a little higher, and the property inactive, those renting, are a little higher. So everyone's seeing a little bit of improvement there, but not a vast amount. Now, all states also improved. You can see there New South Wales, Victoria, Queensland. My dog is making a lot of noise. I may have to take him out in a second, which could be interesting. WA too. It's interesting. Somebody mentioned the other day, how do you keep the dogs quiet? Well, I do normally, but may be a problem tonight. So if that is the case, I'll have to rush away and just cart him outside for a second. But we'll see. In terms of age bands, in fact, yep, hold on. I'm just going to go and shift the dog outside. Won't be a second. Sorry, that just to explain that we have a three-legged dog who can't get around and just occasionally needs a bit of help. So I've now... Dogs don't like spookies. That's probably right, actually. Okay, age band. Sorry about that. 20 to 30, slight improvement. 30 to 40, very slight improvement. 40 to 50, massive improvement. That's because, frankly, a lot of people are actually very leveraged into the property market but don't necessarily have mortgages. And, of course, they've also got considerable exposure to stock markets, which have done very well. And the 50 to 60 is doing quite well as well. The 60 plus is not doing so well. And that's because they're very reliant on savings, very reliant on income from the banks. And of course, as I showed earlier on, rates are a lot lower than they were. So the overall index is sitting there in the middle. And if I look at the elements making up the index, there's a little bit of movement in terms of job security. You can see there that there's a little bit of uptick in terms of more secure jobs. The about the same, in other words, no change in security, is around 30%, and the less secure numbers come down a little bit. So that's a signal that things are definitely on the improve, for some people at least. If you look at the income, which includes, of course, government support, then in fact people are saying, well, my income's gone up a bit. Interestingly, compared with that, the proportion with fallen income is down a bit, whereas stayed the same is sitting at around 30%. So that's where we are with on the income side. And on terms of cost of living, there's still a huge pressure there. So we've got massive proportion saying costs are still rising. One of the reasons why I think that the question of the real economic growth rate compared with the one officially reported is worth exploring. I think for all sorts of reasons, the truth is that actually things are probably worse. Falling, hardly anybody says it's falling, and stayed the same, some. So there you go, that's where most people are saying it's more expensive, and I'm seeing that. Go down the shops, cost of vegetables still higher, cost of electricity's gone up, people are spending more time at home, for example, as well. And even with some of the changes to fuel prices, it's still not massively good news. Debt is more manageable but growing, and that's because rates are so much lower. Many people have switched, many people have been able to refinance. Some don't, of course, but if they do, then they can perhaps get a better rate. There's a greater proportion, therefore, who were less comfortable but dropped back a little bit now, and then you can see they're about the same. It is about the same. Savings, supported by government policies, because of course a lot of people have more money in the bank now, and that's a combination of pulling down on the superannuation, the tax rebates that some people got, and a few other bits and pieces too. And the net consequences is that there is a higher level of comfort than previously, and that's despite the very, very low interest rates. But of course a lot of people are still very concerned about the returns on their savings, and you've still got half the population saying I'm really uncomfortable about the savings I've got, and they're still raiding them in some cases as well. And about the same has come down just a little, so you can see there's a bit of movement there. And if I then go on to the mapping now, this is going to be quite an important conversation, because what I've now done is I've taken those indices, the financial confidence indices, and I've now mapped it to individual postcodes and thought what I would do is to show you how that might look in practice. Now, to do that, I just need to make a couple of changes to the computer screen. So just hang on a moment. I go there and I go back to there. Okay, so this is an example of the mapping. It's actually Sydney. And the way to read it is that the yellow is higher levels of confidence, and it fades down to almost, very light colours with lower levels of confidence. And the beauty of this particular chart is you can sort of step out and see the distribution a bit further out, as I can do that, roll it out there. And it's quite fascinating just watching the changes. So you can see there that basically in the eastern parts, things are actually a little better. But go out towards Parramatta, not so good. Go out south and, down there below the Canterbury Bankstown area, and you can see a few issues. Menai. This is a very important observation. So what is happening is that confidence is not uniformly spread across all of the locations. And that's, I think, an important observation. Trust that will be the end of the woofing, but I can't guarantee it, unfortunately. Okay, so that's the New South Wales one. Now, what we can do is we can have another look at other areas. Let's go to 4000 and look at Brisbane. So this is now drilling into the Brisbane location. And what's fascinating about this is that as you begin to sort of pull out, you can begin to see areas in and around Brisbane where confidence levels are quite low. Eagle Farm, for example, is stands out with significantly lower levels of confidence, whereas some of the other areas are looking a little better. If you come out further, you can begin to see the patterns emerging. Now, what's interesting here is those of you who are familiar with my mortgage stress data will understand that there is a certain correlation between those areas with high stress and with lower levels of confidence. So that's quite interesting. And if we decide to sort of wander down the coast a little bit and look at the Gold Coast and Moreton Bay and places like that, again, you can see some quite interesting variations. Some of the areas down towards Logan, Ipswich registers, of course, as you would perhaps expect. That's a high-stressed area as well. And if you go up further up beyond Brisbane, up towards the Sunshine Coast, you can begin to see some variations there as well. So it is quite fascinating just looking at this and seeing how the stress and the confidence levels do vary by different locations. Now, I might just do a couple more, seeing as I can. Why don't we go to 7,000? Okay, so this is Hobart. And what's fascinating about Hobart, of course, is a very significant rise in prices over recent years, but also high levels of stress, as we showed the other week, and also the fact that in some locations we do have the high levels of confidence, particularly in and around Hobart city itself, but further out it's definitely a different story. And if you drop out of Hobart and go down the coast a little bit further, you can see that there are some areas where there's also significant questions. And I can pretty much do this for any location in the database that I have. So let's just do Perth. Okay. So Perth, of course, is interesting because the overall confidence levels are significantly stronger in the West, as I showed you earlier on. But it is really interesting to look at where the confidence levels are high. Basically, in and around the city itself, not too bad. But if you start going further out, going north, up to where some of the a new building is, of course, or going south, particularly down towards places like Rockingham. Even, I suppose, down to Mandurah if you want to go further down the coast. You can see there that there are some interesting things going on. So it is quite fascinating just watching the distribution. And what this just highlights again is the patchwork nature of what is going on. And the fact is that average across the country or average across a state is missing this granularity. You've got to get the granularity. Now, I have a theory that you can begin to correlate some of the price movements and some of the price expectations and some of the rents compared with what this might actually look like in terms of this data set. So I'll be pushing further analysis through this model ahead, but I hope that's given you a bit of a flavour of what I'm seeing. I will just show you Melbourne, which I think I did not do and probably should do. Okay. It's a bit the same story. So in the sort of central areas of Melbourne, not too bad, quite yellow. But as you move further out, up towards Moonee Valley, for example, towards Essendon, or if you go west or east, you begin to see some quite different trends emerging. Big areas around here, towards Dandalong, that's where a lot of stress, of course, also exists. And if you go over the other way, up towards Melton, it's looking pretty wobbly there too. And as you pull further out, you can just see quite clearly that financial stress and confidence levels are really concentrated in certain areas, and those areas are the ones where I think we will see significant pressure on prices ahead. Now, if that is of interest, then I might, while I'm here, also just show you this one, because I also did the same analysis on net investment yield. Now, before I discuss this in detail, let me just cover a couple of definitions. I did a post the other day on net and gross investment yields for property. And I had a whole bunch of people after that show ask me what I was using to define. So let's be clear. Gross yield, which is the one that all the agents quote, is the relationship between the rental, assuming that was fully let, just the money paid in rent, compared with the price of the property that you're buying. That's how they calculate it. And that's the one that they always put up in lights, and that's the one that is highly misleading. What I do is calculate the net yield, the net investment yield, which includes all of the ongoing costs of managing the investment property, including paying the interest on the mortgage, the maintenance costs, the agent's costs, the strata fees, etc., 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 right? And then what you do is you put that into the calculation, and that gives you a completely different picture. So, in fact, if you look on this particular chart, this happens to be the Sydney chart, you can see there that the net investment yields, the one end go from minus 0.8% and below in net terms to 1.1% and above. Basically, anything deeply red is deeply negative, and anything towards the yellow is positive. Now, this is fascinating, because then what you can do is to begin to look at different locations and see where the net investment yields are more adverse. And guess what? It's perhaps the areas that you would expect to an extent. So if you go out towards Western Sydney, you see swathes of red in those areas like Campbelltown and places like that, and, you know, Blacktown. If you go closer in, Lane Cove and Willoughby, it's not so bad, but, you know, not great. You have to look quite carefully. French's Forest is doing pretty well. In the Sydney CBD, it's doing quite well. Rose Bay is doing quite well. So what this shows me is that there are whole areas where investment properties are not washing their face net on net in and around Sydney. Now, let's look at let's go over to Perth. Bit of a different story there. What's clear is that in and around the centre of Perth, the rental returns in net terms are positive, and you can see there all the yellows. As you go further out, you begin to see some areas of pain north of Perth, and if you wander down the coast a little bit, there's a little bit of evidence of it. But the point I'd want to make is that, well, there's Mandurah down there looking quite red there. The point I'm wanting to make is that in the Perth environment, with the capital prices of having fallen so far, in fact, the investment prospects in the West are better. That's one reason why there's a lot of interest in property investment in Western Australia at the moment. But I would also highlight the fact that there are some areas where things are not looking so good. So people need to be quite cautious and careful and do the math with regard to the returns. Now, we could perhaps look at Hobart, because you may recall I mentioned that Hobart has quite a lot of stress, but actually in rental terms, Hobart is a reasonably good bet at the moment. In other words, despite the fact that some rents have come back, you can see there's almost no red there at all. And even if you pull out and look more broadly around Hobart, then you can still see that it's pretty good. So Hobart is probably somewhere to consider if you're thinking of investment property. Now, if I go to Melbourne, guess what we see there? Red already. And Melbourne is actually a classic case where, apart from a few suburbs, it's looking pretty sick. So I wouldn't be making much property investing in and around Melbourne at the moment. The returns are pretty chronic. And even if you go out to regional areas, there are some that are not doing too badly. But you can see there that net-net at the moment, it is significant. Otto was asked, what's the timeline for calculating returns? Annual. I'm doing the annualized the last 12 months. Because I'm not sure that you can take account of just a spot. And that also includes whether the property was vacant for any time as well. Because if the property was vacant, then obviously that would take the rental stream down. Now, if I go to Brisbane, what's Brisbane doing? Brisbane is doing a lot better. Generally, Queensland has been performing a lot better than Victoria and New South Wales. There are a few wobbly areas that you see as you pull back, but it's not anything like as so severe. It's pretty neutral down around Ipswich, so you can see that they're pretty much breaking even or slightly below, depending on precisely which area is looking at. And there are a few areas, if you pull further out and further down, that is not looking quite so good, particularly inland to the south. But it is just a completely different ball game. And the point I want to make with regard to property investing is that you need to do the calculation granularly. You need to actually think about the full cash flows, money in, money out, not just the high-level quote that somebody in the real estate sector has been throwing in as a gross real rental yield, which is effectively a theoretical rental compared with the purchase price. That is not the correct way to calculate the true yield. And the only thing I'd say here is that I have not included the tax incentives and, you know, what may happen from a tax perspective. It's too complicated to try and do that because individual tax codes are very different. So this is a pre-tax view. But nevertheless, it is fascinating to look at the contrast between different areas and just see how things are shaping up. I could spend a lot more time looking at this, but I think that's probably sufficient to be able to get your give you a good sense of what's going on. And so I'm just going back to my slide. So that's just the coding there. The net investment yield mapping I've just shown you, that's the key. And if you want more information on that, the show I did was called Property Investing by Numbers, did that a couple of days ago. Very interesting conversation, very granular. I got so many people who misquote what they think their returns are. Say, my return really good. No. Your return is not good when you do all the calculations. I don't believe that there are that many rental investments that are actually performing that well across the country. Look at this, 1.1 and above is my sort of separation. So there'll be some higher than that, some at 2, 3, 4% net, but that's the exception rather than the rule. Now, the stress modeling is nearly ready for deployment. And I'm just going to cover a question from Patrick by way of mortgage stress. So let me just push that button. Okay, and then I'm just going to do this. And I'm going to load. Let's go there. There we go. Okay. So this is now the mortgage and my basically the postcode analytics. Patrick wanted 2251. This was before the show started, and I promised I would do it, Patrick. So here, this is for you. All right. So in 2251, which includes Avoca Beach and a few others there, up in just outside Gosford. Number of households, 14,600. Those borrowing, 6,000. Those renting, 5,200. 3,900 properties for renting. There are around 4,800 property owners, and around half are in financial stress. So the top level metric is 50%. That is quite high level. Now, when you come down into the granularity, 38% of households with a mortgage are in mortgage stress. Generally, anything below 40 is okay, not great. Anything above 40, I worry about. There are 65% of those in rental stress. That's 3,400. And there are 45% of property investors who are actually stressed, including 668 who are in severe stress. So this is very important to understand. This is a cash flow basis. So basically, in severe stress means that's true of mortgage stress, or it means or investor stress. What it means is that people are underwater, considering underwater, and that means they're going to have to do something. And then here are the price scenario projections. As I said in my scenarios, I run three main scenarios. The first is a best case, assuming the virus gets conquered with the vaccines quite quickly. The second one is a longer term where it keeps popping around. And the third is a more significant downturn because the virus still rages. And the truth of the matter is that here, in the best case, you might see prices rise over the next 2 or 3 years. Not dramatically, just a little 1.6 cumulative. Units, perhaps a little better, because my expectation is that in this scenario, more investors will look to units and there is a less supply of units in some of these areas. On the other hand, if you follow my central case, then there's still room for prices to fall 6 or 7% over the next 3 years. Does really come back to what's going to happen with regard to health. Now, that's that one. Daniel has asked about 3220. 3220, let me put that one in. Give you another one. Okay, so this is Geelong, Newstown. 7,800 households, 2,400 borrowing, 3,700 renting, 2,800 properties for rent, and 2,200 rental property owners. 56% in financial stress, so that's a bit higher. 58% in mortgage stress, that's 1,421. And there's a risk of default there of about 60 over the next year or so. 58 is quite high. 58% also in rental stress, that's a coincidence that those numbers are the same. And 34% of property investors, including 27 who are severely stressed. So there's a bit of downward pressure. That's why, in the best case scenario, I'm still expecting prices to drop slightly over the first year, and then recover in year two and year three to be slightly ahead in the best case scenario. In the mid case scenario, still slightly down, 5% down and 9% down for units. And in the worst case scenario, 14% down over 3 years, or 23%. So that gives you a bit of a flavor there. And now I've got people interested in this information. 3781. Okay, happy to look that one up. Okay, 3781. So this is Cockatoo. That's in regional Victoria. 1,675 households, 1,200 borrowing, 408 renting, 312 properties for rent, and 319 investors there. 47% in financial stress. So, you know, it's substantial, but a little bit below the 50% mark. 30% mortgage stress, not too bad. 361, but 80% of those renting have rental stress, and that's significant. There's a lot of renters, of course, in Victoria still with work issues even now, and roughly one third of property investors also under the gun. In my best case scenario, I'm looking for a small drop followed by a rise in home prices for houses with about 3% rise over 3 years. Worst case scenario, 13. Mid case, minus 5. And if you look at units, a bit the same, a bit of a wobble down, up 5 again. This is a cumulative 5.6% over 3 years, or down 8.7 over 3 years, or down 23.1%. So you can pay your money and take your choice, depending on where you want to place your bets with regard to the virus. Okay, now 3 megawatts. Let me just try and do this. I want to get my thing going. Okay, if I do that, there we go. 4305, please. 4305, please. Let's see whether I can do that one for you. This is where I get myself into some confusion with too many mice. You wouldn't believe the technical complications I have to do to be able to make this work. 4305. There we go. 4305. I'm just going to take the chat off so that it doesn't get in the way. Right. So this is 4305. Quite a long list of places. Basin Pocket, Ipswich, etc., West Ipswich, 25,000 households, 9,000 borrowing, 12,000 renting, 9,900 properties for rent, and 5,600 investors, 49% in financial stress, so again, quite high levels of stress, 5,500 in mild mortgage stress, 60% of households with a mortgage in difficulty. That is definitely showing up as a significant area. 44% of renters, more than 5,000 in rental stress, 26% of property investors in investor stress. As I showed earlier on, the truth is that investing in Queensland, returns in Queensland are better relative to some other places. And the modelling shows that in the best case scenario, you could see prices up 6-9% over the next couple of years. Units slightly higher too, and that's partly because the expectation would be if the virus gets put away and the borders open, there's going to be more demand across the board, particularly for units where there is perhaps a lower supply. The base case is pretty much no change to prices over the next 3 years, as you can see there. The worst case is a fall of 8.6% for houses, or 14.9% over 3 years. So there you go, that's that particular one. George, what are you saying? Let's do it for Vincent. Okay, can do that. 2114. There we go. 2114, including Meadowbank, West Ryde. There we go. Okay, so number of households, 9,700. Borrowing, 3,400. Renting, 4,700. Properties for rent, 3,500. Number of rental property owners, 2,900. Overall financial stress, 56%. That's high, but we'll see why in a second. It's not mortgage stress, only 12%. 433 households are in mortgage stress there. But rental stress is very high at 73% with 3,400 rental-stressed households. And investor stress is also very high at 59%, 1,500. So the best case scenario would be a very slight rise over 3 years. In fact, I'm saying a couple of percent over 3 years for houses and about 3% for units. If the base case plays out, then there are small falls. If the worst case follows, it's down 15% and down 25%. So it does come back to those virus scenarios in terms of the outcome. All right, another one there. 2550. Okay. Okay, this is like Bega, so this is the South Coast. 7,700 households, 2,500 borrowing, 3,000 renting, 2,300 properties for rent, 2,450 investors, 35% financial stress, that's lower, of course. Only 9% have mortgage stress, that's 230, so almost nothing. 64% are in rental stress, so that's quite significant. And 31% of investors are in investor stress, but nevertheless, the expectation is that if the best case scenario plays out, then there's a rise for houses and for units, 4 to 5% over 3 years. But you can see there that the other scenarios, it's less positive. In fact, in the worst case scenario, we're looking at a fall of 13% for houses, 23% for units over 3 years. And they're coming in thick and fast now. Hooper's Crossing from Jengrit. 3029. I've given up on trying to show the social media chat. It's just too complicated while I'm doing this. Okay, this is another very important area to understand. Big development, of course, in recent times in this area. 30,000 households, 18,400 borrowing, 11,000 renting, 8,000 with properties for rent, 9,600 rental property owners. 48% financial stress overall, 33% in mortgage stress at 6,100, 60% in rental stress at 6,700, so rental stress is a big issue, 23% of investors in difficulty, 1,600. And the expectation is that if the virus gets conquered quickly, then not much this year, but next year you could see a significant rise of 4%. Over the next couple of years for houses, and for units slightly higher at 7% over 3 years. If the virus continues to rage for longer and there are more lockdowns, further falls over the next couple of years, and in the worst case scenario, down 13% and down 21% over 3 years. So there you go, that's that one. Okay, another one there. let me just go back up the chat a bit because I think I missed a few. Okay. There's one here. I've got lots of requests coming through, so I may not be able to do them all, but 2360. Oh, come on. 2360. Yeah, my typing is the problem. I've got a keyboard with a sticky, I think with a sticky key that doesn't always type, which is a bit frustrating. Okay, this is 2360, which includes Russell, Mount Russell, I should say, Little Plain, 6,300 households, 2,000 borrowing, 2,800 renting, 2,100 renting, properties for rent, 1,613 property investors, 46% in financial stress, 54% in mortgage stress at 1,100, 52% in rental stress at 1,400, and 21% of investors in investor stress at 307. And you can see there that the trajectory is slightly positive over the next couple of years in my best case scenario at 2.5%, units slightly more so, whereas the falls are more significant for units at 24% down and houses 15% down if the virus really drives back. Okay. Now, let me just have a look and see. There's an interesting conversation there, I think, about... I'll do some more in a moment. I just need to have a breather on that. Yeah, there is an interesting question, of course, about the virus and the mix of the virus and will it be kept out and how will it be kept out. Also, cross-stitch and, yes, I agree. It's 10 years, amazing, isn't it, from the Ipswich floods. I don't know whether you saw, but there was an interesting program the other day talking about the fact that many people were now buying properties in those low-lying areas. It's as though they've forgotten what had happened previously. So it amazes me how quiet people go about the floods later and, you know, don't want to talk about it. So it's pretty significant, I think. I also think that, you know, we should probably expect more storms and things ahead. We'll see. Right, let's have a look. Try rural Victoria. 3341. Can try that. Okay. 3341, there you go. Let me just get rid of the chat so that you can see it. Okay, 640, very small population, 66% in financial stress. A lot of mortgage stress there in the area, interestingly. It pretty much registered everybody. No rental stress, no investor stress to speak of. We're projecting significant rises, not necessarily this year, but next year, 5% or so, over 3 years. For houses, very few units, of course, where they are there. There's perhaps more demand for them, so that could be a bit stronger. So there you go. That's 3341. Patrick asked an interesting question. Could the trigger for property price falls be the popping of the share and bond markets? Well, of course, it's all connected. My own modelling at the moment is saying that it's the virus that's probably the most significant factor in terms of driving particular behaviours out of the back of this. But I guess it's true to say that you know, things could change. I think I'm about to be visited by more dogs, so just hang on. At the moment, it's doggies, wall-to-wall doggies tonight. But there you go, we'll see. Yep, as expected, doggies just arrived. Hello. Goodness me. Okay. Yep, more doggies is being taken out for another walk. Come on. Yeah, sorry about that. It's doggies everywhere tonight. Okay, so I'm not sure which is going to lead. I personally think the issues to do with health is the most significant. I'm not sure they want to. We're having some interesting doggy conversations at the moment. My wife thinks the dogs want to go out for another evening. Go on, off you go. And the dogs want to come and sit with me and play with the computer. Hello, go on then, off you go. It's crazy. It's crazy, crazy. Sorry about this. Okay. So that's what my thinking there. I'm not sure. And the, you know, what are the bond markets and the share markets going to do? Are they going to go up? Are they going to go down? I'm not sure. All right. Let's see what else I've got. Three, three, two, eight. There's another one. My wife has completely failed to get the dogs to go out. They're both now sitting beside me. It's quite hilarious. You would not believe the... hang on. She's given up. Do you want me to look after them, or are you having them back again?
No, it's 9 o'clock. They're going to come.
All right. Go on, off you go then. Sorry about this. I've now got doggies who think that it's perfect to come on the show. Oh dear, oh dear. Okay, 3328. Sorry, this is a little bit confused. This is crazy. This is real life. Sorry about this. 3328. 3328. Teasdale. Okay. So look it up. Hallelujah. Okay, I must just. I wonder if you can see this. Just a second. Whoops. There you go. This is me dog. This is Luna. This is Luna, who thinks that it's great that I'm playing with her while broadcasting on YouTube. Say hello to everybody. Look over there. Hello to everybody. There we go. Okay. This is Luna. Come on, Meteor. Come and say hello. Come on, Meteor. Come here. Right. This is Meteor. That's the other doggy. Sorry, this is the this is doggy heaven, I'm afraid, for those who like dogs. So this is Meteor, that's Luna, and I'm just going to get rid of them. Come on then, off we go. Come on. Come on then. Sorry about that. Real life intrudes. Okay, I was looking at Teasdale, wasn't I? Okay, here we go. And actually, it's quite funny because Cross Stitch Ange was actually talking about the dogs the other day. So there you go. You got a full exposure to the dogs on you while I was doing your post. So how about that? Okay. Teasdale, 613 households, 467 borrowing, 93 renting, and 71 properties for rent, and 33% in financial stress. Mortgage stress, 33% of households, 156, and a bit of property investor stress, not a lot. So that's 33%, that's quite low. So relative to many others that I've shown you, it's pretty pretty low, I would say, in that particular postcode. Okay, now what else have I got? Okay. 2174, I promised to do it earlier in the show. Okay, so 2174. Okay, 2174. Get rid of that so that you can see it. Okay, so this is Emerson Park, 666 households with financial stress at very high level, 100%, and that's because the mortgage stress is so high there, and rental stress is also registering very high as well, a bit of investor stress. Now, the thing about this, of course, is it's a relatively new area, and my suspicion is that that's probably one of the key reasons. I'm also forecasting falls in prices. Even in my most aggressive scenario this year for both units and houses, and then breaking even in the best case, worst case, considerable falls. This is one that's been on my stress list for a long time. And of course, the population growth is quite significant there ahead as well. So here we go. Hope that gives you a bit of information, and apologies if I didn't get to it before. Now, you also asked, do compare it with 2565. So this is 2565, 7,100, 3,400, 2,800 renting, 2,100 properties for rent, 1,500 property investors, 53% in financial stress, 46% in mortgage stress, or 1,500, and 2,053 in rental stress at 72%. 21% of investors, 170. And as I said, the growth in the best case scenario, is quite limited this year, slightly higher the next couple of years, but not dramatic. Same for units. In the worst case scenario, considerable falls. Okay, now what else have we got? Do that one. This is from Sir Cookie Boy. Congratulations on your promotion, Mr. Cookie Boy. As the virus spreads, the risk of a mutation, which the vaccines will not work, rises. The number of cases in the US and the EU are still rising sharply. Predict 400,000 dead by 20th of January. There's certainly significant issues around the world. I mean, we are very fortunate here, and I don't think there's a better place to be than probably Australia at the moment. But the fact of the matter is there is a lot of questions around the world. And, you know, I continue to unfortunately lose friends in the UK and in the US, people I've known for years and years and years, who've fallen foul of this this horrible thing. So it is real. It can kill. We are very fortunate here that it actually has not reared its head that much. But that's one of the reasons why my scenarios continue to take a little bit of a range and say, look, I'm just not convinced necessarily that the vaccine programs and everything else that we're doing is necessarily going to be as effective as people would hope. Hope I'm wrong. I hope that it's all going to disappear. But even if it disappears in Australia, you've got to ask this question. What about the rest of the world? Because clearly we're not going to be able to open up our borders simply and easily until the US and the UK and, you know, other places around the world are also nailing it. That could be a long, long time. So even if we are able to ring fence it locally, and of course New Zealand has pretty much announced that other than at the borders, they are pretty open and free. WA, of course, is probably the most open state in Australia, and I showed you the high levels of confidence. So there are things that can be done, but you know, you've got to draw a line around it. I think this is something which is going to go on for a lot longer than many people think. Oh, Joe. Yes, bored of postcodes. Well, there you go. I have to say that I could probably do a whole show just on postcodes, but I'm not sure necessarily I'm going to do that. As Ange says, Richard Branson's mum died of COVID this week. Yeah, there are a number of people that I know personally who have also died. Not just old people, by the way, as well, I should say that. OneBirdUS7, hi there, and thank you very much for encouraging people to like. Yeah, please do like the show. It is one of the ways that you can help to propagate this. The truth is that, liking is very easy to do, and yet so few people do it. So I would appreciate if you could like the show, please. Cases rising in Japan, zero customers this week. Yeah, that's exactly right. Cookie Boy asked about Tim's Wilson's spooking. This is the guy, of course, who's saying, well, yes, well, you know, superannuation, pull it down and go buy. How can he give financial advice, right? It is ridiculous. And I have to say that the concept of the government just encouraging more and more people to churn into property is really, really very concerning. I showed you those high levels of debt figures earlier on. The problem we've got is that we've got some people who are doing okay, as I said, the K-shape positive side. We've got others who are not. The problem, of course, is that the government only needs a slight majority, so they don't have to sort of meet everybody's requirements. As long as they've got enough people who are caught and believe that they've done the right thing, in other words, property owners, then they'll get voted back. And remember that my theory is, and I discussed this with Tarek last week, the main reason for what they're doing is about getting in rather than actually really taking a strategic future into hand in Australia and laying a pattern for future growth and development that would actually take the economy to a better place. So that's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. Julia said, he should be prosecuted for what he's done. Yeah, I think that's right. You know, it's interesting how the regulators come down like a ton of bricks, and anybody who's quasi-giving financial advice, that's one reason why I keep having to say, not giving financial advice, no. And yet politicians seem to be able to have lots of wriggle room. I'd also make the point that some of the questions that he asks, because he leads the Senate House Economic Committee, of course, gives the Reserve Bank a really easy time as well. So, Jamie says, "I'm still at the intersection of the K. Help!" Yeah, that's right. Well, you can see this thing moving in two directions, right? What I'm concerned about is that I'm trying to work out who stands up for the people in the lower leg of the K. I mean, there are some charities who are doing some great work and all of those things. But I have to say that the real truth is it's quite worrying that we seem to be just barrowing along, throwing the property spruiking out there and just trying to get buy, you know, and prices are going to go up and invest more and buy stocks and everything. But it's not answering the fundamental issues relating to that other cohort, which I think, unfortunately, will lead us to a position more and more like what's happened in the US. You know, the US has been at this longer, right? So that's one of the reasons why, with regard to all the things that happened over the last couple of weeks, that was not new. This has been, the foundations for that had been laid years and years and years ago. And I worry that we're laying the similar foundations. No, I haven't. Luna and Meteor are the two new dogs. And just to explain, Luna was actually the name that was given to the dog by the previous owners that came off a farm near Canberra. Interesting, Luna is the most popular name for dogs in Canberra. Did you know that? Meteor was the name we gave to the other dog because she was actually called Meatball. And we decided that we couldn't possibly cope with a dog called Meatball, so we sort of found something similar. So Meteor is what we've done. So there you go. That's the story of Meteor and Luna. Okay, what else have we got? What factor in your modelling makes the outlook positive, even for the best case, with rental and mortgage moratorium ending, business delinquencies and more stocks to come for sale? Good question. The truth is that low interest rates are actually driving down the actual costs and increasing the affordability of property. So that's the first point. Secondly, all the incentive schemes, all the government incentive schemes, you know, the Western Australian $50,000 is absolutely driving more people into property. And the issue there, of course, is that there is a strong expectation that the government will continue to spruik property and will continue to support the construction sector. So there will be more and more property. We've got an oversupply of property at the moment, and there are many people being cajoled to buy property. So that's the second point. The third one is the bank's lending capacity is being increased because they're getting very, very cheap funds from the Reserve Bank, and their lending standards are being loosened. Of course, from March, they will not have to worry about responsible lending anymore. So that will actually be another force which will drive more lending. And if there's more lending, that's going to create more momentum in the market. And the final point is, I still think that in the most positive scenario, with the borders opening, and that's what I've assumed in my most positive scenario, we'll see international migration start again. And if migration internationally comes in, we will get lots more people wanting to buy property. There's an oversupply at the moment relative to demand. That will change potentially. And we will get international investors coming back in, not in the immediate short term, but over the next little while. So those are some of the factors in the modelling that's taking it. And what's interesting is I survey households in terms of their buying intentions, right? And their selling intentions. I've still got more property investors signalling they're going to sell rather than buy. I've got more first-time buyers and owner-occupied purchasers signaling that they're interested in trading up or buying for the first time than previously. So there is still strong demand there because they are believing the spruik. And, you know, at the end of the day, the spruik is there. For many people, it's not a spruik. For many people, it's truth and reality. And that's one of the reasons. So that's why. And you've got to counterpoint all of that with all the negativity, the mortgage stress and the other things. And the thing about mortgage stress is it doesn't lead necessarily to an immediate cessation of the ability to pay a mortgage. It's a long-term grind. And people are getting more and more comfortable paying an ever larger proportion of their salary and income to support their mortgage. So if you look at the data, as I do, there are a lot of people with 50 to 55% of their income now going on their mortgage repayments. Now, if I go back 10 years, 33% probably was where you would sit, maybe even lower than that. So people are more comfortable now with bigger mortgages and just putting more of their incomes into supporting their property purchasing. And so it's a bit like the analogy of the frog in the frying pan, right? So you basically turn up the heat slowly and the frog boils to death. Well, that's where we are now. So people have been taught to spend more and more and more on property. And that's the other factor that's in my modeling. So there's a propensity model in there as well. So there you go. It's some of the things that have driven it. As Joe says, if I was on 3x income, I'd be on 500k in Sydney. I'm up in Brisbane. Yeah, well, you know, the fact is, I remember when I used to write mortgages years and years ago, right? It would be 3x the first income and half the second income. Right? And that would be the amount that could be borrowed. Well, we've still got many people now taking 5 or 6x income. Some banks are still doing 6, 7, 8, some non-banks as well. And with very low interest rates, all the banks, and of course, APRA lowered the hurdle. APRA has basically given the banks a free pass to lend more because everybody knows that if the music stops, then not only will the properties crash potentially, but also banks could crash as well. So this is, as I've said several times, this is about bank keeper much more than anything else. Okay, now let's have a look. So, Angie says, isn't the K-shape the net standard at any given moment in history and time? There are winners and losers. Yeah, but I would argue that it's more extreme than previously. And I would argue that all of the programs and all the initiatives are actually specifically focused in on the upper leg of the K. I think if you go back 20 or 30 years in Australia, it was more egalitarian. And when I first came to Australia, you know, a long time ago now, I was amazed at how the overall cohesion of society was developing and people were actually supported. So I think we've got this much more extreme than we used to have. And so I would argue that it doesn't have to be that way. Call me old-fashioned, but that's what I fundamentally believe. Otto says, any positivity is based on more lemmings being drawn into the state-sanctioned property pyramid scheme. Yeah, it is. It is. It's a Ponzi scheme. And the Ponzi scheme needs more people sucked into the bottom to support the whole pyramid to stop it falling over. It's a Ponzi scheme. And this is a good one. WA50K was spurred on urban renewal. Building is going nuts. Construction spends leaks into the rest of the economy, making the economy expand from its very low base. I agree with that to an extent, but look at the price of existing property in and around those areas where all of those new properties are being built, firstly. Secondly, look at the price of land home packages when that was announced. It went up by 50K. So it's lifted the price before you start. And so my argument is, yeah, it's moving a bit of money around the economy and it's helping at the margins, but it's structurally the wrong strategy. I don't believe those incentives actually make any sense at all. Vincent says, apply for credit. Credit checks are very thorough. Credit is tight. So where is the money coming from? Depends. There is still substantial availability of credit for some, not everybody, I agree. And the banks are still tighter than they were. Some of the non-banks are doing more subprime lending than previously. So that's one factor that's now in the mix that wasn't there previously. And remember that banks are fighting over each other for the good loans. And that's what I'm also seeing, that there are some people who are getting really, really amazingly cheap mortgages because they've got a lower loan-to-value ratio and therefore perceived to be lower risk. Some of the others less so. So one bird, yeah, seven. Meatball asked if you could do. Okay, that's a nice way to get me to do another postcode, isn't it? 4551. I like that. Oh, very good, very good. I like people playing the game. Well, let's see if I can do 4551. What? Okay. Okay, so Queensland postcode 4551. Push that button so that you can see it. Get rid of that so that you can see the thing. Okay, 26,600 households, 8,400 borrowing, 12,000 renting, 9,200 properties for rent, 8,100 investors, 43% in financial stress overall, 39% in mortgage stress at 3,000, 3% in default potentially over the next 12 months, 45% in rental stress, 5,400, and 35% in investors are actually in difficulty, including 191 in severe stress, and going back to mortgage stress, 293 in severe. And you'll see there that the projection are that in the best case scenario, you could see prices rise 10% over the next couple of years, 8.7% over 3 years. Units even more so for the reasons I described earlier, but the base case is nothing like that. And the worst case is a fall. So there you go, that's that one. Let's go back to there. All right. Madeline makes a very, very important point here. Unfortunately, the more Australia has become Americanized, the less egalitarian we have become. I agree with that. We have followed, unfortunately, it's not just America, but we are certainly following the American plan. And unfortunately, we've got this sort of bifurcation going on. The worry I have is that it's getting harder and harder for social mobility to work because of the gap between the two legs of the K. And it also means that ultimately, if we're not open to some change of strategy, that we're going to follow the US in terms of this massive division between the haves and the have-nots and the very wealthy and everybody else. You know, it's the cornerstone of neoliberalism at the end of the day. There is a different path, but we are sleepwalking into this future, and unfortunately, the afraid both sides of politics seem to support it, which is not a good move in my view. Okay. Yes, do the calculation, IMA. Yeah, I agree. You can borrow a huge amount. It amazes me just how much is feasible. You know, 5, 6, 7 times gross income of both household participants, if you've got two people, can take you into a very significant area. It's very, very worrying. And Liz has made the point. Two-tier society with little or no movement across the wealth gap. Exactly what I said just now. Spot on. That's the problem. You end up with effectively two different worlds. End up with an affluent world and you end up with the rest. And I'll just give you an example from the UK, because in southeastern England around London, hugely affluent, not completely, but a lot of affluence there. If you go north, completely different world. And the polarization between those two is dramatic. And what's fascinating is that the political classes in the UK have done nothing to try and tackle this, despite the fact that it's pretty critical. Now, let's see, what was this one? Jeff, thank you for that. Appreciate the contribution. 4305, let me do that one for you. Where are we? What are we doing on time? 9:24. Okay. 4, 3, 5. What I love about doing this is I discover new places that I didn't know existed. So I didn't know there was a place called Tivoli. Okay, so this is Basin Pocket, Ipswich. I think I did this earlier on, didn't I? 25,541 households, 9,000 borrowing, 12,000 renting, 6,000 properties for rent, 5,600 investors, 49% in financial stress, 60% in mortgage stress at 5,517, and 44% in rental stress, 26% investor stress, and you can see there the profiles. The truth is that if the scenario is the most positive, then there's significant growth for units and houses, less so for some of the others. So I hope that helps, and thank you again for the contribution that you made there. Appreciate it. All right. Now, it's an interesting question here. Do you see a repeat of the 2008 crash with the amount of subprime loans being accepted? Do you think they've learned the lessons? I don't think anyone's learned any lessons. The thing that's stopping this from falling over is all the liquidity that's being thrown in by central banks around the world, right? Massive amounts of liquidity. I did a post on this the other day. What they're doing is just pushing the can down the road and throwing more and more liquidity, creating a more and more unstable financial system. The volatility that we've seen amongst stocks, including Bitcoin, is all part of the same conundrum that it is basically to do with central banks and what they're doing. So there is really no free market anymore. It's all controlled by the central banks. And I think the chances are that we will have a crash, but it will be of a different flavor to the ones in 2008. I don't think it's going to happen, you know, immediately, but it will happen. I wouldn't be surprised to see a stock market crash starting and that then spilling over into other things. So that's how I'm reading it likely to happen. I've been watching the bond market. Long-term bonds, 10-year bonds have gone up quite a bit, and that's partly because they're now expecting more cash injections from the Biden administration into the US. Those changes to bond rates could have a significant then fallout more broadly. So watch the financial markets. I'll be making more commentary on the financial markets in the weeks ahead, because I think it's pretty critical. But I don't think it's going to be a repeat of 2008. I think it will be maybe a rhyme 2008. Thank you very much. I appreciate that contribution. Thank you. Okay, running out of time, really. 3460, says Chris. 3460. 3460. Okay. Basalt. Do you know another place I didn't know existed? Interesting. I'm learning a lot about geography by doing this. Okay. So this is 1,800 households, just 382 borrowing, 1,100 renting, 839 properties for rent, and 379 property investors at 60% financial stress overall. Significant mortgage stress, 100%, but not a large number there. 54% of renters, 40% of investors. So that's the story there, and we're modeling a fall followed by a small rise over the next couple of years for houses, and the same for units. So there you go. Hope that's been of some help. Thank you very much, Cross Stitch Ange. This is to buy a couple of doggy bones and treats for Luna and Meteor. Great seeing the behind the scenes tonight. Thank you very much. Yeah, it wasn't planned. But anyway, I'm glad that you enjoyed seeing them and seeing the dogs. They are great. We are trying to train them at the moment. They came off a farm 2 years old. They had no training at all. So I've been trying to sort of get them to sort of sit and to walk beside me and all that. Oh, they're they're so energetic. But it's great fun as well. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much for that. And we'll get some bones. Okay, 4108. I'm just going to do one more, and then I'm going to stop and just wrap up. So if I've missed yours, I do apologize. 4108. 4108. Archerfield. Get rid of that. Okay, 2,300 households, 724 borrowing, 1,300 renting, 998 properties for rent, 270 investors, 31% in financial stress, mortgage stress 36%, 263, rental stress 31% at 402, and investors 23% stressed 62. And you can see there the trajectory. In the best case, significant growth, well, 10% over 3 years for houses, 16% for units over 3 years. Base case, much lower, small rises or falls in the worst case scenario. All right, so let me just see where we are with the chat. Okay, good. Okay. Gone a bit transparent. There you go. I half pushed the button. Glad to help. So let me just come back to the presentation. We'll just finish off the presentation. Where's that gone? Where's my cursor gone? I've lost my mouse cursor. There you go. It's new. It's there somewhere. Okay. So let me just back up. Should I do too much here? Okay. So, in terms of just closing out now. Okay, so the stress modeling is nearly ready for deployment. Within a month or so, it will be deployed. What you saw tonight, you'll be able to get access to directly. So that'll be helpful and hopefully good news. And it means I can do the stuff on other things rather than doing postcodes. If you want to get this data, the data that you saw tonight, you can do that. There's a special offer on our Patreon channel. $50 a month sign up gets you all of the stress data and all of the postcode movement data that I showed you. It's going to be there for the whole of January, probably February too. But and then those who sign up at the $50 level will also get prime access to the full model when it's launched. So that's the way if you want to get access to the data. And here's just to show you that you can put in the postcode and you can literally get those trajectories that I showed earlier on in the model. So that's available via our Patreon channel. Or if you want a particular postcode, you can always send me an email, go back to the DFA blog, use the contact form there, or use the little app at the bottom. Ask me for a postcode. I'm happy to send you individual postcode data. Just give me a few days, because I get lots of requests and can't necessarily handle them all straight away. Now, if you're interested in some of the other stuff that we do, go to walktheworld.com.au, including our wealth management solutions with Nucleus Wealth and other things like that. It's we try to sort of build out our capabilities, and that's one of them. If you want more information about what we do, go to the DFA blog. There's the URL. You can sign up there to get alerts to everything we do. And there's also our one-to-one service, which I won't go through in detail, other than to say that if you want to chat with me about a particular postcode and go into lots of detail, about an hour for a Zoom, you can do that. It's $250 Aussie plus GST. We have to book about 3 weeks ahead because, frankly, there's just so much demand. But if you want a deep dive on a postcode or a suburb, that's how to do that. Again, send me a message via the DFA blog. Or if you want to make a contribution to help us, there's our PayPal details there. I really appreciate those who do help us. As I said earlier on, we don't make any profit out of doing this. This is purely just a question of covering our costs. There's a lot of cost involved in creating all of this stuff that we do. Or you can even make a contribution via Bitcoin. Given the current situation in Bitcoin, you know, if you feel the same inclined, feel free. There's a QR code. There's a bit of merch that you can look at as well if you're interested. I won't push that very hard, other than to say that there's a few people have done that. Also, if you want to sign up over at Walk the World Productions, another YouTube channel, we'll be putting more information up about how we do our shows and some of the technical stuff. I've split that off, as I discussed last time. I had a few more people sign up. There are also some back catalogue releases relating to our walking around various locations. And there's a walk around the studio, which is what I showed just now. Let's go to the main camera. So this is actually describing everything that we've got here and how it all works. There's never time to show you too much, but there is a show there on Walk the World Productions, which is a separate YouTube channel that allows me to then explain in more detail how we do our things. But we're going to do a lot more on that, because I've had lots of questions from technical questions from people about how we do what we do. And so the Walk the World Productions channel is now up and running. So do sign up if you're interested in that. In terms of next week, I've got Damien Klassen coming back on from Nucleus Wealth. This is on the 19th of January. And we're going to talk about markets on the edge. So it's very highly relevant. The truth is that we are not sure how the market's going to play out. They're going to go up, going to go down, going to go sideways. Who knows? Damien will be presenting some of his latest thoughts. And of course, Damien is part of the Nucleus Wealth team, and I, you know, we have the Walk the World Fund and the Walk the World Super that he runs. So that's how we do that. So mark your diaries next Tuesday, the 19th, 8 p.m. Sydney time with Damien. The following week, I've got Tony LeCantro on, and Tony will be talking about his perspective with regard to some of the small caps. So that'll be worth thinking about. Also, I did a very interesting interview this morning with George from ITC. George does a lot of training for real estate operations, and he had an amazing story to tell, so we'll be putting that post up over the next day or two. I've got a couple of other interviews which I'm recording tomorrow. One of those will be on the penetration of Bitcoin based on a recent survey that's just been done. So how many households have it? Who are they? How much are they holding in Bitcoin? Those sorts of things that'll be also worth watching in the current in environment as well. Okay, so I think we're done. Thank you, Cookie Boy. Appreciate that. Nice show tonight. Thank you very much. Cross Stitch, yeah, very good. Thanks very much. Be kind to share the posts and other shows that viewers like. Yeah, please do share. I am trying desperately to get to 50,000 subscribers. Just over, you know, a week and a half away probably from achieving that goal, which will be remarkable. So please, please spread the word. And I'm going to cause a riot now. Thank you for the When's the Red Alert Part 2 expected? Yeah, I created a storm by releasing that show with John Adams over on The Interest of the People. A lot of people thought I was complete nuts. Didn't necessarily support the thesis, but I thought it was important to share it. Not quite sure, week or so probably before the other part. So that's what we're going to do there. Glad you enjoyed the pups. Well, a bit of entertainment. What we might do is we might have a doggy interlude in the shows. Now, for those people who didn't get their postcode, and I know there were a number of people who asked and just didn't make it, send me a message direct via the DFA blog, and I will answer with the information that I would have done on the post live. I just don't have time to do any more. So thank you very much for spending some time with us tonight. Thanks for all of those who spent time posting and chatting. I'll be interested to read all the comments that I missed, because there were just so many comments like rabbits. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, rabbits indeed. Rabbits, possums, anything that moves. They don't like the blue tongues, the lizards, and they don't know what to do with the water dragons. They just look at them and think, I'm not sure what to do with that. So, Greg says, cut him loose. I assume you mean John Adams. Bail-ins. There's some conversations to be had about bail-in. There's going to be some changes to prospective legislation, hopefully quite soon, which will be quite important. And there's an interesting question there about the immigration question, exploding population. Question is, will they open the borders, and if so, when? It's a good question. I didn't say a thing about Red Alert 1. Well, I did just now, so I haven't said any more about that, though, for obvious reasons. And Cookie, yeah, I've got a few new guests. I won't advertise that tonight as to who they are, but watch this space. And thank you very much for the wishes to Luna and Mita. I'll pass it on. I'm glad that they've made some more friends. They are delightful dogs. They just wear me out. So with that, I want to say thank you very much for spending some time with me. Sorry for the slight chaos tonight with all of the dogs, but nevertheless, I think we got through it. Join us again next week with Damien Klassen. That will be a very interesting and important discussion, particularly with the volatility in the market. So I look forward to seeing you then. And there'll be more posts every day between now and then. I've got a whole lot of content already made, more coming. And I look forward to seeing you then. Thank you very much for spending some time with me this evening. Take care, keep well, and we'll see you next week. This is Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, signing off. See you next time.